Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
I ain't know, like, this was the birthplace and nobody showed me the birth certificate.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 217 with Fred the Godson. Fred is a rapper who can say that hip-hop is in his blood, literally. Not only is he from the home of hip-hop, the Bronx, but his father also used to work at NYC Nightspot The Tunnel, whose hip-hop nights on Sundays, presided over by Funkmaster Flex, were legendary. So it only makes sense that Fred would grow up to become one of the best rappers out there. His intricate punchlines and metaphors are the stuff of mixtape legend, and his talent has led him to collaborate with some of the biggest rappers, DJs, and producers in the game, including DJ Drama, Busta Rhymes, Teddy Riley, and his go-to beatsmiths, the Heatmakers. Fred's talent has also been recognized by XXL, who anointed him one of their freshman class in 2011, alongside Mac Miller, Meek Mill, Yellow Wolf, and some guy named Kendrick. Fred's newest project, out this past August, is Gordo. We spoke to Fred the Godson at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. If you enjoy the show, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thecyphershow. Every new patron gets Sean a little closer to perfecting the recipe for a vegan McGriddle. Go check out the rewards you'll get for signing up. If you want to know any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what's going on with The Cipher. And now, here's the youngest guy in the tunnel, Fred the Godson. Fred, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Like a G5 is one of your most recent singles. So I was listening to it and I noticed you shout out the McGriddle on it.
The brick little, but got a thick middle. Bread always come back sweet. McGriddle, I'm fly like a G5.
Which McGriddle is your favorite?
Sausage, egg, and cheese. I wish I had one of them shits right now, man. Damn. Yeah, I can't believe you started off with that, man. Starving, man.
Our producer Josh also rides for the sausage, egg, and cheese.
Oh yeah, he gave me the Tiger Woods fist pump, man. So we in good company. Shout out to Josh, man.
So what can you tell me about the new project that Like a G5 is going to be part of?
It's called Gordo. It's like bringing a bar back to New York, mm-hmm. where the music is shifting a little bit to, you know, back to the original rapper, the lyrical rapper. So, you know, everybody that knows me know I'm like the last of the bar kings, man. You know what I'm saying? So I'm bringing it back to that. Everybody that wanna, you know, that's been a fan of that and we've been lacking that. So I just gave them like 22 tracks of that. And it's crazy.
You've mentioned that this year you talked about being kind of a reintroduction.
Yeah.
Can you break that down for me a little bit? What were you doing beforehand?
I've been in the studio. I haven't dropped a project like in a year and a half.
Right.
And I've been doing a lot of features, a lot of ghostwriting shit. Mm-hmm. So, like, people, they want to hear me, you know. So that's why I put so many tracks on there and, you know, really pushed the pin on this one. So it's like, you know, nobody drops 20-something tracks no more because the people attention span is so short.
Right.
Motherfuckers dropping like 7-10 joints, but they've been waiting for a while. So my reintroduction is the overload. So that's why I did that.
You know, I want to kind of take it back to the beginning with you a little bit. So you obviously grew up in the South Bronx.
Yeah.
And so as someone getting into hip hop as a kid and listening to it and kind of discovering the culture around it, did being from the South Bronx where the roots of hip hop are, did that have any special resonance for you?
I mean, at the time you wouldn't, you don't know that, you know, because I was a kid,
right.
You know, oldest out of six, we lived in a shelter,
right.
156 in Fox, you know, so we had rap, the music, and I just knew I liked it, you know what I'm saying? I ain't know, like, this was the birthplace and nobody showed me the birth certificate, whatever. So, but I just knew I liked the music, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, later on I found out, and I mean, as an artist, it helped me, mm-hmm. you know? It gave me that extra push, and I was proud to rep it. But as the fan, Fred, beginning to be a fan, I, you know, It was just
right. I guess, you know, kids are only sort of aware what's in their immediate.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know it started up the block. You know what I'm saying?
So you said you were in a shelter that started after a fire, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember the fire? Were you too young?
Yeah, I remember. I was young, but I remember a lot of things, like from when I was a baby. Yeah, my little brother used to wake up and turn the stove on, come out his playpen and walk in the middle of the night, and because it just turned the knobs, because you see my mother turn the knobs of the stove.
Right.
So he ain't know that fire is bad, you know? So he'll wake up, come out his playpen and just start turning on, and he'll wake up in the middle of the night and do it. So a couple of times we caught him, but one time it was grease on the stove, and by the time everybody opened up their eyes, it was, whole shit was on fire.
Jesus. And so then you went from where you were living to a shelter.
At 156 and Fox.
How long were you there?
He was there for like two years.
Wow. And what was that like for a family of six kids, right?
So, yeah, was six of us, my mother and my father.
Yeah.
It was hard because at that time, you know, it was the late 80s. My father was on crack. You know, crack hit everybody hard, you know. So my father was on drugs heavy. And my mother, she was 24, six of us. And it was just crazy, you know. So that's why music, rap was like, you know, my homie.
So your father, at some point after that, during the mid-90s, I assume after he cleaned up, he worked at the tunnel.
Yeah. 27th and 12th Avenue. The Notorious. Home of the Chooks. Home of the robbery. Home of the bodies. The illest club in New York. The tunnel. Yo, let's take it back to the tunnel.
The Tunnel was a nightclub located in the Chelsea neighborhood of New York City that operated from 1986 to 2001. Starting in 1993, the club hosted a hip-hop night on Sundays. It was started by promoter Jessica Rosenblum, who was looking for a place for her client, DJ Funkmaster Flex, to spin. Sunday nights at the Tunnel became legendary. If you want more information, listen to Cypher Sounds talk about his time DJing there on episode 44. We'll also have a link to the oral history of the event in the show notes for this episode.
Did he ever sneak you into the club?
All the time.
Yeah.
I was the youngest kid in there. They'll tell me to come through with my friends. I'm 16, 17. I'm walking in there. It's crazy. Met Peter Gation a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
Peter Gation is the former owner of The Tunnel and several other major NYC night spots, including Palladium and The Limelight. You can hear more about him on episode 188 with Stretch Armstrong and Evan Auerbach.
Nice. You know, what do you remember about The Tunnel, especially since you were so
crazy.
Much younger than...
Because, like, right now, I'm in the club scene,
right.
You know? The fucked up thing about that was my first club I ever been in was The Tunnel.
Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so every other club I'm going to, I'm like, this shit's small as fuck. And niggas are like, yo, what the fuck you talking about? And I'm like, yo, this shit is mad little. And then it was like, this is one of the biggest clubs in Jersey. I'm like, this shit is small, man. You know, so...
Right.
Like, I'm in there, and it's like four flights, and there's different genres of shit, and it was the craziest shit ever, and I didn't know it at the time. I just thought, because that's my first club, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never been to a club, like, even, and I didn't know I was going to be part of history, because right now, the club scene, none of that shit could even match. Even the top three clubs in New York right now, you put them together, they don't match what was going on in The Tunnel.
Right.
I remember in the car with my father, and he's like, yo, Fred, the club's going to be crazy today. And Flex is on the radio saying, first 1,000 girls free. Like, 1,000 people don't even fit in these clubs now. Motherfucker said the first 1,000 girls free. First 500 men before 12. It is like, that's 1,500 right there. The club was holding 5,000-6,000 people.
Right.
You know, and it's amazing, man. I don't think we're going to see nothing like that ever again.
Were you there for any of the performances?
Yeah, I was there. Remember the first time Nas was promoting one of his albums, and that was the first time I seen 50. And 50 wasn't 50 yet, but he had the record, How to Rob an Industry.
Yeah.
This is Cherub, and I am at The Tunnel Sunday night like we do every Sunday, only today is a Nas record release party. I got 50 Cent here.
He had that. He walked in. He was stocky. He had a bulletproof vest on. Nas was there. My father introduced me to Nas. And then 50 came and he introduced me to Fifth. Fifth had the, man, that nigga looked crazy. If I'm not mistaken, I think Prodigy was there. Nah, it was crazy.
That's amazing. One of the funny things is when you started rapping, basically everyone around your dad knew before he did, right? A bunch of people in the community kind of knew before he did.
Yeah, I would be in the streets. down here, 42nd Street. I spend a lot of time in Harlem because for some reason when the ciphers and the bars and everything was going on, when people was battling, it really held place. It was really a lot of Harlem rappers doing it. Mm-hmm. So in the Bronx, it really wasn't that many. So we'll come to Harlem and just get crazy. You know, so as the word was getting out, word of mouth. Because back then, the YouTube, Instagram, of course, that wasn't out. You couldn't just look on your phone and discover a motherfucker. So it was like some people would be there and then they'll whisper, tell one person to another. Then started hitting my father's ears where he'd come in and be like, yo, you rap? Yo, you rapping? And I'm like, yeah. He said, yeah, man. People running up to me saying you're pretty good. I'm like, yeah, I'm all right, man. Just leave me alone, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? I ain't want to rhyme for my father again.
Right.
But then it got crazy. So, yeah.
The battles that you're talking about that used to happen back then, having done so much of that, what do you think of organized battle rap stuff that's incredible happening today?
Because it's incredible because, you know, shout out to Smack, shout out to Beasley, shout out to URL, because it's bringing in a lot of money, mm-hmm. you know. And the crazy thing about it is, even if they wasn't paying the rappers to do it, they'll still do it because we love it so much. I know the feeling.
Yeah.
So I salute them because they really paying the artists to get it done, because they could have been like college basketball, like, and would never pay no, like, pay them, but you know, you're still gonna do it. You have to.
Right.
You wanna be known, but, and they treat it like boxing, where, like, it's not even where they're saying, all right, the bout is 5,000, whoever wins get the 5,000. They're treating it like boxing, where, oh, you're gonna battle him? How much you want? All right, I'm gonna give you half right now. How much you want to battle him? Okay, I'm gonna give you half right now. And I give y'all the other half after y'all battle. So it's like if you win or lose, that's just for the streets to mock you or tease you about it, but you still get
but
your
otherwise
full.
It's like a normal performance, like yeah. a concert. Yeah.
Like my man Loaded Lux, he got $40,000 for one battle.
Right.
You know? Me and Charlie Clips get like $20,000 a battle and $25,000 a battle. When they do this like full time, two times, three times on the URL. And then he goes around the world and battle and they pay him like $5,000-$10,000 for one round. So you make a good living off of it. It's beautiful. And then you know your opponent, you study him for 2-3 months, and then right. y'all go in. When I was doing it, you just had to have your bars in your head, and at any given time, you could be surrounded by 100 people with a dude in front of you, and you had to battle. It'll be times where I'll go out with a girlfriend or whatever, and the day starts off, we go into the movies, then we go get something to eat. Nice day, nice summer day in New York. And then you go into the movies, and then motherfucker just stop you. Freddie Godson, right? Yeah. I want to battle you. Couldn't say no. Word of mouth spread so fucking fast, faster than any YouTube clip ever. Mm-hmm. Like, before you get to the next block, niggas is calling you like, yo, I heard you scared to battle, motherfucker. I'm like, oh, shit. So you had to hold it down. So you like, all right. And you telling them, like, yo, bro, like, listen, man, I got to go to the movies. It's my girl. What the fuck about that shit? You're like, all right, man. You start rhyming.
Yeah.
He got a couple of people with him. A couple of people's walking. You start battling each other. 5-6 people turn into 26 people, 36 people. Then before you know it, it's like so crazy. Like, and you just had to hold it down. Yeah. And then, you know, I used to kill everybody. They used to fly me. They used to call me. And, like, you know, the older dudes outside, they got money. Everybody got artists now. Everybody got their little man that rhyme. Mm-hmm. My little man, dope. My man, Freddie Godson, kill him. Who's that? Kid from the Bronx. I got 1,000 up. Yo, Freddie, you want to make some money real quick? Yeah, come to drive right over there. They take me over there, hop out, eat them real quick. Man. Shout out to D and Y from Rough Riders.
That's Joaquin Waugh Dean and Darren D. Dean, co-founders of the Rough Riders.
They used to have people that wanted to get down with Rough Riders, and they'll be on Undercliff in the Bronx. They have a dude that want to be down with Rough Riders that said he's good.
Oh, and you would be the testing ground.
Yo, Fred, come over here, man. We want to see what he's about. And I'm looking at him like, damn, man. Too bad you ain't going to get that thing, man, because I'm going to go. Like, you ain't going to get it on the... That ain't gonna be your story. Yo, right. How you get down Rough Riders? I ain't gonna lie, I killed Fred the Gut. Nah, we ain't gonna do that.
Right. Is that when you met Vado around the time you were battling a lot? Fred,
Vado, Toast, Moscato, clap when a nigga getting chips. Bravo.
Vado is a Harlem rapper and Cam'ron protege who has frequently collaborated with Fred.
Yeah, Vado was out there. Mm-hmm. Vado was out there. Most Hated, Harlem, him, J Mills, everybody, man. It's you know, I knew Vado for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And it's Lux, Charlie Clips. Yeah, crazy.
Nice. One of the things about your style that I really love is the amount of things you do that are plays on like homophones, right? Pronunciation and words that sound the same but have a different meaning.
They know I rhyme well. These A&Rs are comedians like Jerry because everything they sign fell.
Again, the mind gotta eat. I'll cater the lines. I still tower over. I'll cater the grind. You get it? I'll cater, tower over. Never mind.
They see me on the block with the Lincoln Park. They know I'm selling rock like Lincoln Park. Fast flow, they click on my Lincoln watch. They see me with the big Cuban Lincoln watch. They might plot on this big Cuban Lincoln watch. Put your face on this five like Lincoln watch. Abraham.
And so I was curious about how you think about that and how you work those into songs. Sister Act, like Acura, and Sister Act, yeah. The movie will pop in your head and you kind of wait around to put in a song.
Where you gotta get your gat. Rookies, still riding in your sister act. Whoopie, real and I show.
How does that
it's
work?
It's weird. It just comes. Everything comes at once. I think because I got a big ass head, I wear a size 8. You know, so it's like a lot of more room than an average person. So I think my brain just has more room to shake, you know. So, but I had rappers that was offering to pay me and send me down big rappers, platinum rappers that wanted to me to show them how, what's the process, how I think of these things. And these are dudes that's already good.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to keep something a secret, but I don't know how it happens. Mm-hmm. It's just something that, you know. It just pops in my head, and I don't know why it pops in my head, but I know it's different than everybody else. You know, I know the way I think. I don't think nobody really thinks like that. You know, or I haven't met them yet. You know, it's different. I don't know.
And so the whole line or verse will come out with the puns in there, with the wordplay in there.
Yeah, it's just funny. The Kardashian,
right?
The girls that treat your girl like Kim, because every time the Kardashian, you know,
right.
I nickname your girl Kim, because every time the Kardashian, yeah, I used to scrape the plate.
What?
Brillo had the head swinging back and forth.
What?
Willow, cops tried to ban me from the court.
What?
Billow, Riley, still with his girl.
And it's just different things. Like, this is bugged out. I have fun doing it, though. I mean, people like it. I know I'm doing something right.
Yeah. You said you can get inspired by whatever's around you.
Yes.
Like, you'll look around and see something. And
I could be in a room.
What can you see in here that might inspire you?
See, because you put me on the spot, it's like I can't. I know people that can freestyle and say anything in a room.
Right.
See, with me, I have to be not doing anything. And mm-hmm. I just go, like me and KRS-One. I was on KRS-One album. Mm-hmm. And I was writing a verse, and it had that modules inside the studio. And I turned my head while I was writing, and I seen Avalon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, my flow fire, you Avalon backwards, got no lava.
My flow fire, I burn the Avalon. You Avalon backwards, no lava. I'm Obama, Osama, old drama, old llamas. Forget about it, old timers, old Osama's.
And it's just like when I was seeing Race Car on Sports Center. Yeah. It said the race car, and I'm like, I hate y'all bastards. It's the same shit like spelling race car backwards.
Yeah. I hate y'all bastards. It's the same shit like spelling race car backwards. Yeah. I don't use baseball.
I seen race car, but when I seen it backwards, it still said race car.
Right.
And I don't look for words backwards. It just, sometimes when I look at something, it goes, and I'm like, wow.
Amazing. Were there any artists you studied growing up that sparked the punchline thing?
Without me knowing I was studying them, I was just liking them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it became a study without me knowing I was studying them. Mm-hmm. My uncle put me on the hip-hop, really. Rap. I mean, I like rap because the boom, but he put me on to the lyrics. You know, rest in peace, he got killed. He died in my arms. But when I was younger, he'll come and go, yo, man, you need to start listening to Rakim. But he's older. He's in his 20s, and I'm like, 10, 11 years old. And I'm like, yo, who's that? And then he's showing me the words. And he's like, see, he's saying this, and this mean this. And then he's showing me Tribe Called Quest. And the first punchline I heard was...
I was going to ask about this, the one on Electric Relaxation.
Yeah, it was, I slept in my soul, so your couch, now you got Siemens furniture.
Let me hit it from the back, girl, I won't catch a hernia. Bust off on your couch, now you got Siemens furniture.
Shy. When he said that, I'm like, whoa, shit. Fuck is that? Yo, he said Siemens furniture. Like, my uncle was like, that's what I'm trying to tell you. And I'm like, wow. That was the first
kind of double meaning.
Yeah, that went crazy. Like, yeah. I never heard no shit like that. I don't even remember the rhyme.
Yeah.
I just kept going back to that. And to a fact, point to where I'm a little kid, I'm going to my mother and I'm telling her, and she's laughing and she's like, yo, what you know about that? I'm like, that's crazy though, right? Like how somebody can say that semen and semen, but it means the same, but it sounds the same. Yeah. And then the first real hard line that I heard was, remember, because my father was working at the tunnel.
Right.
He came in with Reasonable Doubt record before anybody heard it. We had it like 6 months prior because Rockefeller was giving out. Mm-hmm. They was promoting. I said, yo, this is a kid named Jay-Z, man. My friend said that this dude is real good. He's friends with Biggie. And at the time, I was a Biggie fanatic. So I'm like, all right, put it. I had the system in the room. And like, I remember I had a bad asthma attack 3 days later. So I couldn't go anywhere. So I just put the record on. And when he was like, at his wake, as I creeped in, looked in his casket, feeling sarcastic, looking at him, still sleeping.
Spit quicker than you ever seen, administer pain. Next, the minister screaming your name. At your wake, as I peek in, look in your casket, feeling sarcastic, look at him, still sleeping. You're never ready.
That blew my mind. And then I became an automatic Jay-Z fan from there. Like, this dude is crazy. Yeah.
Amazing. So you mentioned asthma. I know you've had a bunch of health issues throughout your life, you know, asthma and kidney failure, high blood pressure, diabetes. How now on a day-to-day level, how is that affecting you?
Nah, it's hard. Like right now, I was asleep. I was knocked out. And my daughter kept me up all night. They called and said, I forgot about this interview. So they called and said, yo, you got to come out. So I took my pills. I take like 8 pills every morning before I leave. I took the 8 pills, but I had to rush out. I fell back to sleep by mistake. I had to rush out, so I didn't eat. So that's not good. But it's, you know, I'm used to it. I mean, sometimes that's why you said McGriddle. You just fucked the whole day up. You know what I'm saying? So but I mean, other than that, you know, I had it for so long, so I know the things I'm not supposed to do and the things I can do. A lot of times I fuck up, but then I gotta drink a lot of water after that. And, you know, it's hard because, you know, everything out here is, you know, not good. You
know? Right. Especially if you're doing club appearances late at night and
there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Everything that's out that is bad.
Right.
Yeah, I get a sandwich. McDonald's doesn't help that shit 24 hours now.
Right.
Breakfast all day. We get McGriddles at 5 in the morning. You know, that never works.
Right. Yeah. Right. You don't smoke, right?
No.
And is that in part because of the asthma and different health issues?
Nah, that never was my thing. You know, like I said, I don't have a reason. People say maybe because your father was on drugs, maybe because your father smoked a lot of cigarettes. My mother used to smoke cigarettes when I was younger, but I never had the thing. And believe me, I have weed in my house all day. My wife smokes. Enough for both of us. And while I'm in the studio, everybody smokes except me.
Yeah.
So it's like, I never, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
They even try to give me this pizza called Stone, New York City. My people try to trick me. Like, now y'all know my weakness is food. They delivered 2 pizza pies to the studio with weed in it. It's TH is made with the oil.
Right.
Like 1 pizza pie is $50. It's made with the oil. They delivered 2. 1 with pepperoni, 1 plain.
Right.
And it looks crazy. It looks like a Domino's commercial. They're eating it, the cheeses, and then they like, oh man, this shit is good, and I'm getting hot. It's the best in the world. Like, I'm like, oh my God. I ain't eat it though.
Getting back to rap for a second. So you have all this wordplay, all these punchlines, but you have to fit it, obviously, in the context of a song, right? Yeah. So I'm thinking specifically of your song Black Power from last year.
Yeah.
Where there's a subject, there's a theme, there's things you want to address, but you also managed to fit wordplay in.
4 years for our bachelors. What a disaster. My ancestors did 40 years for their masters. So I have to go after it all before you enter. Ma, you may have to fall. This is mine. This is Selma, nice weather, sitcom in the 70s. This is Selma, good time and deep.
Can you talk about kind of balancing those two things so that one doesn't kind of overshadow the other?
Oh, it's a thing where the battle rapper, like I'm a battle rapper, you know, but I know how to do songs. The battle rapper's curse is battle rappers can't do songs. And when they do songs, they don't sound like as lethal as he is as a battle rapper.
Mm-hmm.
With me, I always manage to keep it. You're not going to see me in the streets and see me take somebody's head off. Then you're going to hear my music and go, yeah, the song is all right, but when he's battling, he's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
it's a perfect balance. You can tell by listening to my songs. When somebody tell you, if you battle him, he can take your head off. I don't care what you're listening to. You listen to a girl record and you can hear it. Like, nah, I can hear the way he puts the, I don't know how I do it, but I make sure I do it. Mm-hmm. Like, make sure you hear the balance in between, because that's a good question, because a lot of us rappers don't know how to do it. It's a seesaw.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You might hear them dudes battling and hear the best lines you ever heard, and he's, but when you hear his music, you go, what happened to the dude that, you know?
Right.
That's a good question. That's a good question. That's one of the top questions in rap that you can ask. A lot of the rappers, especially people that play with metaphors and bars like me.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because one of the songs of yours that people react to most is one that has some wordplay but is heavier on the concept, which is Monique's
Word. Yeah.
Send a vid to your Facebook. I wish I seen how your face look. While I'm violating, you a pretender. You caught amnesia. You don't remember. Well, I got the memory of an elephant. I would say the nigga name, but he ain't relevant.
Why do you think people gravitated to that one so much?
I have no idea. I hated that shit.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't going to do it. And shout out to Remo the Hitmaker. Mm-hmm. He was going, you know what it is, everybody on my team, it was like four people that was going through it. One dude found out his girl cheated on him. Mm-hmm. One dude, girl just said she didn't want to be with him. And Remo was going through it with a bad joint. I ain't going to say her name, but she's from New York. He was going through it where she left him. And we'll be in the studio, we'll sleep in the studio. And I'll be on the couch knocked out and, you know, and I'm hearing the music and I'm waking up like in the middle of sleep, one eye open, and I'm hearing this motherfucker saying, fuck you, on a melody, a melodic beat,
yeah,
to a girl. Like, he had mad different records saying that. He had one record like, fuck you, bitch. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, yo, my nigga, you can't say that. You can't sing. I never heard nobody sing fuck you, bitch,
right,
on a melodic beat. And I'm like, yo, you can't do that, man. And he's like, nah, man, this bitch getting on my nerves. And then one day I woke up. It was in the morning. And he's like, I don't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck about you.
I'm like, I look at him and I start laughing. I'm like, you done went off the deep end now, man. You bugging the fuck out. And later on that day, he's playing the record. And my manager at the time, Sean Press, was listening to it. And my dudes, my peoples went in there and they was going through it. He was like, yo, Fred, I know you're going to say no, but listen, I know this is my record, but I think it'll be better if you rap on it.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell I'm rapping on that shit. Everybody like, rap on it, please. And all my niggas like, yo, my... So all those things was like them. Like, they giving me the ideas. Shout out, like, I ain't gonna shout out my people's names, but, you know, they was going through it. So I really inherited their stress and went in the booth. Because that shit, I ain't never had no problems like that. You know, knock on wood with a girl. Nobody never did that to me. So it was them. So I was speaking for them.
Yeah.
But then when I realized I was speaking for them, it just so happens I was speaking for a lot of people, yeah, even girls,
right,
most girls. And I made it a dude record. So I'm thinking like the dudes is going to, but the girls took it over like, yeah, fuck that nigga. Yeah, man, I love that record. To hear everybody coming up to me like, yo, like, you know, so it touched. It's personal. Every week somebody is tagging me in a record going crazy. And the most times everybody tag me in is crazy and it's fucked up is Valentine's Day, where a girl is like, I don't fuck you, Charlie, you bitch ass nigga. Fred the God said I love you. I'm like, oh, man, this is crazy.
Oh, man. So at the very beginning of your career, even before you started making records and stuff, you were rapping with someone named Virginia Slim.
Yeah, VA, that's my boy.
Who is that?
That's family. That's my man, Virginia Slim. He's from the Bronx as well, Marble Hill area. Mm-hmm. I was always rapping first, playing around, but never took it serious. And it's crazy. We met like when we was like 11, 12, because my mother, we was in the shelter, things was going bad. She met this lady named Miss McNeil, and she wound up bringing us, our whole family, into a 7-day Adventist church where we went to church every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So as a kid, that's where I met Virginia Slim at.
Okay.
You know, so we met in church. So as years went on, every Saturday, you know, you had to go to church. I mean, church is beautiful, you know what I'm saying? But you had to go as a kid, wherever your mother tell you to go, you got to go.
Yeah.
So as you got older, you know, I stopped because now we got to, like, I don't want to go. You know, it wasn't like it was messed up, man. It's just,
yeah.
It was on a Saturday, man. And it was like, come on, Ma, you crazy, man. Like, I'm not doing this no more. But you see me used to write in this pad and he was just like, yo, what you doing? I was like rapping, like playing around, just writing things down. And he was like, all right, I'm going to try it too. And I'm laughing like, come on, man, get out of here. And I ain't going to lie, man. He called me on the phone one day and his first rhyme had to be by far the best first rhyme any rapper has ever did. Like, because I know him and I'm like, he really wrote this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it to me on the phone. And that's what helped me get crazy because he was just like me. So even when I didn't rhyme, even when I rhymed that day, because we was a team, he'll call me and be like, yo, I got to read you the shit I just wrote. And he'll read it to me. And I'm like, damn. Yo, I ain't going outside. I ain't playing basketball today. And you know, and I was like, I had to try to. So it helped me a lot. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be crazy where I am now. Shout out to VA.
That's great. Is he still rapping or?
No, he retired. He stopped, you know. But occasionally he'll call me and he'll be like, yo, I got a bar two for you. Please fit it in one of your songs. I'm like, I see what I can do. Let me hear it. And I'm like, you still got it, boy. You know, yeah. But, you know.
That guy you were when you started writing rhymes, that 15-year-old guy, is still in your head, right? When you're rhyming, you're still trying to impress him.
Yes. I'm impressing him and I'm impressing myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the main thing. The 15-year-old Fred was, I'm the motherfucker that used to say, they come outside and they'll ask me, who you think this dude is good? And everybody like, I love him. And I'm listening and I'm like, whack. And they're like, ah, he's whack. Because it was just certain. It was things that I was looking for back then.
Mm-hmm.
That if you ain't possessed, I really wasn't fucking with you. I was the lyrical guy. I really cared about how you projected your voice and how the beat sound. I was the dude that had the CD player that turned off the bass. I wanted to hear you clear.
There was this thing where you were really into rap, you were writing rhymes, but when you were a kid, you wouldn't think of yourself as a rapper. Rappers were other people. They were superheroes. They were out there.
That was exactly what it was. You must have, you did your homework because that's exactly what I said.
Like, yeah.
You know, about to see these motherfuckers is ill. they's different people.
Yeah. So tell me about that transition to, oh, I guess I can do this. This is something people do, not just something that.
Because you know what it is? As I talk to people now, there's some people that are more well off than others coming up.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking to a kid from the South Bronx and I'm in a part of New York and that's the slums, like, no bullshit. I was a little kid. I remember when Ed Koch came to the park and he looked around and he said, we have to do something about this. This looks like a third world country. You know, I remember him saying that because my mother kept shaking her head like, we got to get out of here. This is a third world country. I got my babies here. And I remember that. I remember that so vividly. So it was like being from that, you were already at the lowest. So anything that looks big, that looks good, that if I'm looking on TV and I see a dude on TV with a big gold chain on, with the girls, with the cars, that shit don't look real. It really looks like superhero shit.
Right.
So, but because that, while I'm trying to write or I'm doing something that he's doing, I'm like, it's no fucking way I'm going to get there. You know, it's like if I was in a park playing basketball and I see Michael Jordan in the thing and I'm doing the same shit he's doing, motherfucker can't tell me, yo, I'm going to bring you to Michael Jordan. You're going to do the same thing Jordan do. You're going to be on his team. And I'm like, nah. Like, I'm here. This is where I'm at. This shit ain't nothing like that, you know? And that shit plagued me for a long time.
Yeah. So how did you make the transition into actually rapping in front of people and trying to make a go of it?
Because I started getting older because I was really writing in books and everything from like 15 years old,
right.
14 years old, really playing around. But as I got older, I started understanding more. And then what happened was I seen people of my age and in the same vicinity as me. We all fucked up. And now I go outside and now I'm seeing my friends rhyming. So I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I would never in a million years be the first one to do it because I was too scared. But because I seen them do it, I'm like, oh, they rhyming. Oh, shit, I could do that. And then once I seen the crowd's reaction of what they was going crazy for, I said, oh, wait till they get a load of this shit. I'm coming out hot. I'm coming out here tomorrow.
You remember your first line that got a big crowd response?
Nah, I remember it was a crazy bar, though, and I said it. It was the fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
And
so kind of ending your thought or whatever.
Yeah, it was the fourth line, like my fourth line. Like I started off, said something like, my name's Fred, whatever, la, la, la. And I said the bar, and everybody started running around, banging on cars, banging on the mailbox. And I said, like, it's nothing I do in life that gives a reaction like this. So I have to do this.
Right.
Yeah, and it just started like, Fred, come out. Yo, Fred, you got something new. And it was just like, damn. Like, it was a nice feeling, man.
Yeah. To jump ahead a bit, in 2012, you hook up with E1. We've had Alan Grunblatt on the show as a guest.
Yeah, that's the homie. That's the big homie. Shout out to Alan.
Good looking out for letting me do that deal at E1, too. You know Michael Koch, Alan Grunblatt.
You can hear our interview with E1 Records head of rock and urban, Alan Grunblatt, on episode 203.
So how did that happen? That was Mass Appeal was involved in that also?
Yeah. Yeah, they wanted to do the single deal with the Monique's Room. That's after I had that ran around the world with it already. And when it was dying down, mm-hmm. Alan was just like, yo, I want the song. So they got the song for me. We did the single deal with it. Gave me a bunch of money. And then they put it on DJ Drama's album.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest was history.
Right. Speaking of Drama, obviously you did a Gangsta Grills with him.
You can't rank my skill. I told Drama that this would be one of the most lyrical Gangsta Grills. Homie, thanks for real. Back to the birthplace. First, I moved work on the first in the first place.
He's expanded and he's done a whole bunch of other people, but at that point it was still primarily a Southern identified series.
Yeah, not even Southern. It was world. Like, if you had a mixtape, your first reach, if they said when you was putting out a mixtape, what you want to do with this, first thing you would say out your mouth is DJ Drama mixtape. Like, it was mandatory. It's just
right. A
lot of people couldn't touch it because at the time, for him to even just host your mixtape, you already did the whole mixtape and you show for that was $12,000. He'll charge you $12,000 just for him to say some, yo, it's DJ Drama, Gangsta Grills. There it is. Your shit is solidified. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that shit cost you $12,000.
Right.
You know, but it was crazy. So when I was doing it, they said, what you want? Shout out to Press Jersey.
Sean Prez started out his career at Diddy's Bad Boy Entertainment as an intern and worked his way up to senior director of promotions. He started the promotions company Power Moves in 2002 and had garnered clients like BET, Pepsi, Virgin Records, Miramax Films, New Line Cinema, and Interscope Records. More recently, he founded the DJ-centric awards show, the Global Spin Awards.
Prez, go, what you want? What you want? I said, yo, I want this to be taken serious, and I want it to... It's a lot of bars on here, it's lyrical, and I want people to take this mixtape serious. I want it to be a Gangsta Grills. So that was the Prez No Drama, Prez Called Drama. Rest is history. One of the best lyrical, most lyrical, craziest Gangsta Grills ever.
Yeah. How did people react to that you saw, like, when it came out with that Gangsta Grills name on it?
They went crazy. It was dope because, and then we did something at that time, 2012, nobody really was doing. We got 80,000 physical CDs and gave them out to the street, like, you know, and it just so happened that second day, Talib Kweli was coming out of SOBs, and he just wrote on Twitter, like, it's some shit I ain't seen in years. Some dude named Freddie Garson got Street Team out here handing out mad CDs for free. And then I was laughing at the thing, like, and then he wrote, the next thing he wrote was, I'm on number 6. This dude is one of the best dudes I ever heard.
Yeah.
Said, I'm trying to get in contact with you. I'm trying to take you on tour. Please DM me. And then I hit him, and a week later, I was all over the Midwest tearing that shit up with them, getting crazy.
Amazing. You people have supported you. I've seen you on Sway's show a bunch of times, and he is very vocal about being a fan of yours.
Yeah. This man is no stranger to the show.
Okay.
He's been here before, and each time he has thoroughly entertained me because he, to me, personifies what a true MC is.
Okay.
Yeah, he reached out to me. Sway's a real dude, he says. You're one of the best rappers in the world. You ain't get your just due yet. You have to come to my show. Go to his show. Him and Heather, they heavy supporters. And it's that he's just a real dude. Like, he got something. Like, if I like artists and I send him to the show, the first thing they say is, well, you know he's good because Fred said it.
Right.
Oh, this is a Fred said it segment. Fred said he's good. Or when you freestyle, like, and a dude, they'd be like, yo, you going to go in? And when the dude's like, yeah, I'm going to go in, they say, how you going to go in? You going to go in crazy or you going to go in on some Freddie Garza shit? Like, it is like, they just show love, man. Shout out to Sway, man. One of the realest dudes in this game. Shout out to Heather, too.
Yeah, yeah. One of your songs that people took notice of that I thought was super funny was your spin-on remake of, whatever you want to call it, Just a Friend.
I met her backstage at my show. She said her best friend made her go. She big fans of 2 Chainz and Future. Said I spit too intricate, something she ain't used to.
How'd that come about? It's such a well-known record, most people wouldn't really want to touch it.
I was actually in my house listening to old records on a computer, and that came across. I clicked it. I'm listening to it. I'm like, yeah, this is dope. And it just so happens that while Biz was animated singing a hook, I heard my boy Jacque. Mm-hmm. I said, Jacque could do this shit. It'll sound crazy. Fuck it, let's do it. And I told him a month prior, but we never hit the record. And then one day we was in the studio. We didn't have nothing to do. It was like, yo, let's do it. Just a Friend joint. So Arsonist just did the beat over.
Mm-hmm.
And he went inside. Jacque went inside the booth. And on the first take, as soon as the first line came out, oh, baby, yo, everybody started looking at each other like, oh my God. So I was just like, I did the record. Mm-hmm. That night, after I did the record, I put the clip up on the gram. That night, oh, like 5 DJs from the radio was like, I need the record now. So we had to send it to them. We had to send them the record. It wasn't mixed, really. And it was played and played 20 minutes later. And then the next day, KRS-One got my number from Red Alert. And he hit my phone and not KRS-One, Bismarck, I'm bugging. I pick up the phone and I go, that's the food, y'all. I'm low battery over here, baby. So I pick up the phone like, yo, what up? Like, who this? Yo, it's Biz. Y'all killed the record. And it's crazy. It's dope.
That's amazing. You've been releasing projects for five years or so now.
Yeah.
You came out of the gate with punchlines and the puns and all that stuff already so developed. What's improved over the time you've released projects? What have you tried to work on in terms of your rapping?
Always make sure the punchline and the metaphor got more stronger and more in your face. And then still try to make it more a lot more intricate for the listener that fucks with Fred, that they want to think, they want to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
They want to call me a week later and say, now I got it. You know, it's fun for them.
Yeah.
It's like a puzzle, you know? So I try to make records and make certain lines more in your face and then try to satisfy the new audience,
mm-hmm,
that really don't got that attention span, that they're not really, their intellect ain't that crazy, to the people that's been following Fred for years. And
you'll do the get it thing sometimes.
Yeah. You can buy your white flowers. I'm grabbing your missus, Dwight Howard. Get it? Grabbing your missus, rebound magnum. I make your sandwich, no hero son. You gotta roll with it. Leaving an OJ when the cold get it. It's a murder. Look, I let the.
That's when that came into the play. Cause now they know when I say get it, they're like, oh shit. They gotta take the line back.
Oh, you okay. Know? So that was sort of to get in new listeners who might not get the
orange kid. I had to start saying that. So now other rappers start doing this shit too now. Get it? Nobody's saying that shit. Like, I'm really talking to the people.
Yeah. And I heard that you can write basically anywhere, just as a consequence of growing up 1 of 6 in all sorts of places.
Donald Trump can make me go to the fucking war, man. And if I have a pad on me in the midst of shooting, when I got to re-up, I'll put something in it with the rhyme. Like, what's the name of this fucking missile we about to fucking... And I'll put a punchline in there somewhere, man.
Amazing. For the punchline, you do the get it thing sometimes. Another stylistic thing you'll do sometimes is comparison where you don't say like or as. Some people have like the hashtag punchline or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Fresh, I do the Gucci. So I play Kane a long time, Susan Lucci. Yeah, fat sick, I'm a bro. Kill that will, you will slip, on a row.
What about that format do you like? Because you
take the like out.
Yeah.
I actually punted it a couple of times. And the person that really brought that to the forefront was Big Sean.
Right. Yeah, sometimes called the super duper flow after the song where
yeah, Big Sean was the first one that did it.
Yeah.
I am a super duper trooper. Used to the bottom of scuba, so I'm on the grind, skateboard or scooter, till I am the king of my castle, Cooper.
And everybody's out of world's eye, they would say Drake did it, but Drake got that shit from Big Sean.
Yeah.
You know, like, they was cool with each other, so, but that shit, well, I got that shit from both of them motherfuckers, no matter how you put it.
Right.
That shit from Big Sean and Drake, where, say it seems you got more class, we know. Swimming in the money, come and find me, Nemo.
In your city, faded off the brown, Nino. She insists she got more class, we know. Swimming in the money, come and find me, Nemo. If I was at the club, you know I balled, chemo.
Like, you know, so.
Yeah.
I got that from them. And Luda. Ludacris was doing that too.
Yeah.
Coming down the street like a parade. Macy's.
I fill her up. And it definitely fits a lot of your.
Yeah, because you know the crazy shit is it was a lot of times where I was writing songs and that like fucked the whole bar, man, because I couldn't fit it. The shit threw it off like a typewriter, some shit. It was like, that fucking like, I can't see the bar. So now when I knew it was cool to take the like out, I said, oh yeah, we're going to have fun.
Nice. You had some projects that you had talked about in the past that never really came to full fruition.
Yeah.
I was just curious about what happened. There were duo projects with both Raekwon and Olivia.
Me and Raekwon was talking, but it's and with this artistry thing is, it's what you want to do, and then life happens.
Mm-hmm.
Where the fact of the matter is, it's going to be hard to do because this person's over here, you over here. When he's busy, you're not busy. When you're not busy, he's busy. And this shit is just, and we talking about artists. It's like me and Kevin Gates. We was five songs in, and then he just, like he got so busy, and I got so busy where we'd be on the phone middle of the night, like, yo, what we gonna do? It's like, yo, bro, I don't know, man. It's a, you know, so it was a couple of joints. Yeah, same with all, shout out to Olivia.
Mm-hmm.
And we talking about Monster Records. Me and Raekwon ain't really never even started it. We just had features with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as starting the project, we ain't get that done yet. But me and Kevin Gates is five songs in. And me and Olivia did like seven.
You have a bunch of songs with Olivia on spread out on different projects already.
Yeah.
I don't know what made me lead that quick. Made me speed that quick. Let me see that shit. Sitting back with the chauffeur, me with the Gucci loafers, you with the red bottoms.
I don't know if that's stuff that was intended to be on.
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
We have one record that I gotta get it. I lost it in my email, but she went crazy. Like she just bodied this shit, man. And I'm looking for that record. I'm gonna get it. I told Rich Dollars, you gotta send that shit to me.
I was gonna ask about your chemistry with her because the songs you do have together are great. Why do you think you work so well together?
Because Olivia's a gangster, man. Olivia's not a regular girl. Olivia, if you know Olivia, she pretty. She got the soft look. You talk to Olivia, always a G. You know, Olivia's a G. So it's like being in the studio with another rapper.
Amazing. So your very first project had this song called Up to Us that was about then current rookie class, I guess, for lack of a better term, new artists at that time.
I remember the first day that J Mills rhymed for me. Hooked with Lil Wayne and Young Money signed Corey. Nicki Minaj too, spit it on camera. Tiger doing him, what up, French Montana? They know Big Rhymes, my son spitting crack. I'm in Disney World, these are the Mickey facts.
Looking back, I guess 7 years down the line from that, what do you think about that generation and what they've done and where do you see your place in it?
They moving. A lot of them is mainstream and they getting the millions and millions of dollars they deserve. And I'm like that, the dude that talent-wise, ball for ball, like a lot of people can't touch me, but I'm still working the streets. I'm on the block, underground, you know, like, it's like the comparison when you say Jay-Z, you say Jay-Z, Nas, Eminem, Jadakiss. Mm-hmm. I'm the Jadakiss.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? No, let me not say that, because a lot of them dudes' bars is crazy. And a lot of them motherfuckers on the list, they can't really go with me bar for bar, but they, artistry, artist-wise, they're crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The song High Life, when I was listening back to your stuff, really stuck out at me. Very visceral anger at the state of the game, right? At the state of rap and sort of what's going on.
I'm from the Nazis, the Pops, the Block Slingers. When the f*** we started dressing like pop singers. If I wanted a circus, then I could watch Springer. I gotta tell them no, my tumble block finger.
Do you remember a particular incident that inspired that?
Nah, you know what? I'm keeping it 100 with you, man. It was my manager, Sean Perez, man, because he was in my ear, man. He can't, you got to bring it to these motherfuckers with skinny jeans. And I'm like, he said, go in, man. You gotta own it. You got to, and I, like, that's not really my style, man. Even if I'm mad about something, I always said I would never let my anger or frustrations show in my music mm-hmm. with another artist, because it's not their fault. They just doing them, and it's what the people like. You know, just because I don't like it, that don't mean nobody else, you know?
Yeah.
So I never wanted to ever show that, but the nigga Prez was in my fucking ear, man, and just fucking gassed me. But I mean, I went in, I did it, I owned up to it, but like if you ask in the beginning stages, like what you just asked, like what incident, it wasn't no incident.
It was just
him.
Someone telling you, write a song about how you're angry at this day of the game. Yeah, yeah. So the intro to City of God, right? Yeah. You mentioned, I'm thinking of him because I'm working on an article about him now and have talked to a lot of people who knew him. You mentioned Stack Bundles, and you kind of say, like, well, if Stack was alive, what would he think?
And deep thought 750 on the tab of Z, thinking if Stack Bundles was here, wonder what that would be. Rappers are swag.
Raekwon Stack Bundles Elliott was a rapper from Far Rockaway, Queens, who was part of a crew called the Riot Squad in the mid-2000s. Stack had great success on the mixtape circuit, and it started to attract the attention of figures like Lil Wayne and Jim Jones when he was murdered in June 2007.
Did you know Stack? Because he died maybe 5 years before you started releasing stuff.
No, the crazy shit is, when I was rapping, I had little clips and songs on MySpace. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time I had a message from Stack Bundles. He said, call me. And I called him. I'm like, it was really Stack. He said, yeah, man. And I'm like, yo, so I just want to let you know that your shit is crazy. We be in the studio, and anytime somebody say a crazy bar, we go, you and your Freddie Garson shit. And I'm like, no word. He was like, yeah, man. And then he was telling me about Chinks. Chinks was locked up at the time.
Right.
If I could fuck all of these bad bitches, niggas show wood. Coming through the ghetto, grain gripping all wood.
Lionel Chinks Pickens was, like Stack Bundles, a member of Riot Squad. Chinks was in jail from 2005 to 2008. He found success after his release, teaming up with French Montana as part of the Coke Boys. Sadly, he was murdered in May 2015, just a few months before his debut album was released.
And I wound up meeting him once, and we was going to do a song like 2 weeks later, and then he wound up getting killed 4 days later. But he was just telling me, yo, it was like, it's crazy. Like, knew some crazy shit was going to happen, because it was just like, last words was, keep going, man. Your shit crazy. Niggas ain't fuck with you. I'm telling you, man, I know the feeling. When you the illest nigga, but you ain't get your just do yet, you're going to get crazy. I'm telling you, keep doing it. And I'm like, yeah, all right, motherfucker, see you 2 weeks, nigga. We get crazy. But it was like something like he knew I wasn't going to see him. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I wasn't close with him, but I met him once and I spoke to him a couple of times on the phone.
Right.
So
what do you think he would think today, 10 years on?
It'd be rocking. It'd be crazy. The people loved him.
Yeah.
You know, it was just sky's the limit for him. When in the streets, that's the only thing fucked up. The only thing that could stop us is the streets.
Yeah. You've talked a bit about your family so far, and I know that the outro of your Gordo Federico album is about your mom.
Because of the drama, the llamas gonna conquer. Shelly, your mama, they making me a monster. And you taught me to share, but they making it where I don't even care. Goddamn.
Mother, dear mother, I have seen.
Has she been supportive of what you
all
being a musician? Yeah.
My lady right there, man. Everything. She'll go off the deep end for it, you know. Shelly's son.
And one thing I'm always curious about with rappers, and I figure someone as into words as you maybe can help me break this down for me. I'm always interested about how rappers think about rhymes, actual words that rhyme. Are you ever concerned if you rhyme, you know, for example, couch and pouch, just to choose random rhyming words in one song? Are you scared to use that particular rhyme again, even if it's years later?
No. Mm-hmm. Just a feeling. It's just your thoughts. How you feeling at the time?
Just my thoughts, man. Right or wrong. Just what I was feeling at the time.
Mm-hmm. Like, it might happen. It probably did happen. It's just, I don't rhyme so much. I'm pretty sure everybody in the world had did that shit. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you're a person with, like me, that recorded like 1,000 songs already. It's impossible that you had not, didn't do it.
Yeah. What's going on with your crew? Obviously, you have other artists you're working with.
TBM, that's the squad. That's a family. You know, everybody's doing their own thing. You know, my brother Izzo, he just got finished doing time. He should be home today, tomorrow. He's supposed to have been here last week, but they take it to him. He's in Albany. They ain't pick him up yet, but Free Izzo, he'll be home. You know, I got Mr. Papers. He's rocking. You know, shout out to my boy Ben Vito. He rocking. Friday, October. I mean, everybody doing their own thing, but they still family. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we don't talk for a while, everybody's still family, you know.
Any plans for any kind of group project or something?
Probably down the line. Right now, I'm just trying to just work on Fred, because I did that before, and it's frustrating, because it's like you're trying to take on working on your team, mm-hmm. and then you got to work on yourself. The people want you, but your team looking at you like, motherfucker, where the song's going to be on the radio? This, and I'm like, oh, shit, I got to do your shit and my shit, and it's just crazy. So, you know,
yeah,
that'll be down the line.
Yeah. You were obviously your XXL freshman class of 2011.
Best freshman class ever.
I was going to ask about that. So this is a class that just contained people who now are giant superstars, Kendrick and Mac Miller and this whole crowd.
Yeah, I say shiny mind clear with the juice dripping off them. She say I be killing them. I say get a
call. XXL's freshman class of 2011 was Fred, Meek Mill, Big Crit, Psy High the Prince, Lil Twist, Yellow Wolf, Mac Miller, YG, Lil B, Kendrick Lamar, and Diggy Simmons.
What do you think it was about that particular group of performers that stood out?
I don't
and
know,
made them
the man.
Best class?
I know we was back, we was there, we was talking. Me and Kendrick was talking for a while, and I always been a fan of his. I didn't know he was going to be where he is now.
Of course,
like, he took over that whole motherfucker. You know, he was telling me, like yeah, man, the Cali ain't look at you. They say you the God for real. Hey, he the motherfucking God for real, you know what I'm saying? So shout out to him. When I first met Meek, mm-hmm. he came through brushing his hair, getting a lineup. I'm looking at my man's been like, yo, what the fuck, man? How you get a shape up? I have his personal barber in here, man. I need a cut too. You know what I'm saying? So him, YG, mm-hmm. Mac Miller's always been my boy. Yeah. He had Little B, he's kind of nuts. That's my man too. You know, Diggy. Yeah. It was dope.
Yeah, it was an incredible class. Production-wise, you've done a lot of stuff with Heatmakers. It's Santana.
The Heatmakers are a production team consisting of Gregory Arsonist Green and Sean Thrilla Thomas. They are best known for their work with The Diplomats.
Yeah, that's my brother Arsonist.
Okay. Why them? What about that crew? That's
we just clicked. No, they from the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx. And, you know, as growing up, I seen what he did with Dipset and everything. Everybody wanted a Heatmaker beat. And I was chewing somebody ass up in front of 106 one day. And a white CL pulled up, and it was him. He was just like, yo, man, I need to start fucking with you. And we talked, and years later, we got back up. Mm-hmm. And ever since, history.
Yeah. And, you know, finally, you have your latest single from the new project is Different Scenario, which is kind of like, you know, obviously a nod to Tribe Called Quest, to the scenario. It's a posse cut in the same way. I think you have three other artists on it, and, you know, you sampled it. Busta Rhymes line.
Watch as I combine all the juice from the mind. Heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind.
Gold, go, Fred and Eagle, know how your boy play.
As I combine all the juice from the mind.
New York, give me walk on time.
As I combine all the juice from the mind.
New York, give me walk on time.
Why put your own spin on Scenario? What inspired that?
I was actually listening to the song. I always liked that song. You know, it was a good feeling. And then I just felt like New York is making a comeback. So when he's like, Fred, we need something, I'm like, I gotta go to New York. And, you know, the homie just passed away, so it made me really listen to Tribe.
Mm-hmm. Tribe member Malik Fife Dog Taylor died in March 2016.
So, like, what's something more New York than Tribe Called Quest, you know what I'm saying? So,
right. And he's up, and obviously Fife is the guy who got you started on,
yeah,
you know,
that's just bugged out
rap in the first place. So in some ways it brings it full circle. So what else do you have going on? A new project coming out? 22 tracks.
Yeah, 22 tracks for Gordo. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
What else is on your plate?
I try to be tunnel vision and do one thing at a time, because whenever I do that, everything ends, shit fucks up. So right now, all I'm working on is Gordo. Mm-hmm. We're trying to shoot a video for every joint, or mostly all of them. And we're going to push that. And then I have the single that's going to be on the EP. That I'm dropping a single next, but it's not, I'll be dropping a single like within a month. It's not on a Gordo tape, but it's called Special Love. Me and Rick Ross did the Force MD's joint over. This shit is crazy.
Unfortunately, as this show was being produced, Special Love still had not been released.
Yeah, we're shooting a video in Miami and everything. It's dope.
That's awesome. And, you know, you, like you said when you started, you did, prior to this, you had a spate where you were writing a lot for other people. And, you know, we've talked to other artists who've done that. And I'm always curious about that. How does that work? Are you given a title and a concept? Do you sit down with the artist and talk to them? Like, do you listen to their whole discography? Like, what's your process?
It's different. Sometimes they want you to just do you. Or sometimes they know what they want. They tell you the concept. They know which lane they want you to go, and they tell you, you know. And or sometimes they just need a couple of bars, or sometimes they need. And there's nothing wrong with it. You know what I'm saying? All this is incredible, you know. And it's just, I look at it as a blessing. I look at it. I thank them more than they thank me, because y'all just giving me an opportunity to work. And by you asking this of me, I know that I'm doing something right, because I look up to you guys. So if y'all need me for favors or whatever, I'm there. And plus, a lot of these artists is legends. So it's just, I love it.
Do you try to write in their voice or using stylistic tricks you've heard from
them
in the
past? Nah, I used
to
do that in the beginning, like a dummy. Mm-hmm. They're like, yo, I'm calling you because I want your shit. I want to spit your shit. So it's like when I was in a zone before, I used to try to rhyme like them. Mm-hmm. They didn't want that, you know. So now I just do me. And then but when they say it, they make it sound so dope. You know, you don't even think it came from me.
Interesting. Real quick, did your any crazy tunnel stories that your dad ever told you?
Like not even told me. I was there. Mm-hmm. The Bravehearts was going inside. Nas and them was in at the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So it was a fucking line wrapped around the block. Like it had to be 1,500 people on this line. They had a lot of cops up. Everybody know every Sunday at the tunnel, it's a lot of police, a lot of barricades, a lot of cones, sirens. Just on the, for the entrance. So I'm walking, and because I'm a little nigga, and I got like five other little niggas with me. Like I'm 16. One dude is 15. One dude's 16. Other two, 17. So they moving the barricades for us, letting us walk in. And while we walking, you hear people on the side like, yo, what the fuck is this? They better be part of the fucking Bravehearts. Fuck this little motherfucker going. And like, it's, you hear mad people so mad because it's so cold outside. And, you know, the water's right there. And they land us in. And it was crazy. And then this dude went to go check me. He was like, yo, what you doing in here? He was mad. The guard, and he went to go check me. My father was head of security. So he didn't know I'm his, like, that was my pop. So he went to check me. And my father went to him. Said, if you pat my son down and check him once, him or five dudes right there, I'm gonna fuck you up and you'll never work in this shit again. And it was a big dude. He was just like, yo, Fred, how you know? He said, that's my son. I was like, I didn't know. He was like, yeah, come in. My father always told me, make sure you have something with you just in case, because the tunnel's crazy. He's like, I might not get over to you. So he always had me in there. Then he had this one big motherfucker with dreads always follow me around. He had like some crazy cat content. It could look crazy. He'd just be walking like, you good? It was crazy in there. And it was just like, we was looking at all the girls, but we couldn't do nothing with them because they was all older than us. It was crazy, though.
Amazing. Sounds like a great note to end on. Fred the Godson, thanks for coming through.
Thank you.
Fred is, if the term can be said to have any meaning at all, a rapper's rapper. I constantly find myself wondering, how did he think of that when listening to him? And I think it's great that I finally had a chance to ask him. Despite the fact that he showed up before he had a chance to have breakfast, Fred was insightful, funny, and demonstrated how a lifelong single-minded focus on the intricacies of rhyming has paid off in spades.
I especially loved hearing his memories of the punchlines that sparked his imagination as a kid, and of a battle rap scene so intense that he could barely step out of his house without being challenged. Join us next week when we talk to the legendary b-boy pioneer Crazy Legs. The president of the Rocksteady Crew has been around for basically every important innovation in b-boying, and is directly responsible for most of them. We met with him at Rocksteady Park and got a one-of-a-kind look back on his life, his crew, and, of course, his dancing. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cypher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. Make sure you check out our archives while you're there. If you like this episode, you should listen to our interview with another rapper who knows a thing or two about mixtapes, Nino Bless, on episode 82. By the way, if you use Apple's podcast app to listen, go now and give us a rating and a review. It's by far the easiest way to help us out, which is why every podcast you listen to wants you to do it. Seriously, go now and do it. And you can really help us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a weekly show takes at least 20 hours a week, and we could really use the support. If even 20% of you gave us just a buck a month, Josh could sign up for the McGriddle of the Month Club. As an added bonus for our patrons, every month we share bonus audio that we get from our guests, either while talking to them after the main interview is over, or sometimes when they give us some extra special material. We've had behind-the-scenes production stories, unreleased Wu-Tang, and all sorts of things you can never find anywhere else, even on our regular episodes. Join us by the end of October to have access to November's file. You can find us at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow us and let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
And while I'm in the studio, everybody smokes except me.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Shout out to Josh, man.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
I used to kill everybody.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I think because I got a big ass head, I wear size 8.
Our editor is Rob Van Branken.
I was the youngest kid in there.
Our intern is Natalie Marr.
For that was 12,000.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Steve Berger.
This shit is small, man.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher. Glad you're able to make it. And you were early, which was amazing.
That's amazing. If you know me, you know that's amazing. They tricked me. They fucking tricked me with the fucking time. Like